The Oasis Podcast Live is back. We are coming to Manchester on the 11th of December, FAC 251, featuring the Oasis tribute band Oasis Supernova, YouTube sensation James Hargreaves debuting his new band, plus special guests, exhibitions, competitions and more. Get your tickets right now, eventbrite.co.uk, or hit the link in the description below.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Sometimes I feel like I can't move on. Nothing in life is turning me on. But I still see clearly when I see you smiling.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are alright. Did you miss me? Sorry, it's been like a while since last episode, coming up a month. I've had quite a lot on with family and work and stuff getting in the way of my true passion in life, which is obviously talking to you guys about Oasis and all that related sort of stuff. So yes, it's been a while, but we have quite a lot of stuff to catch up on today. And the main thing we're going to be doing is catching up on the various news bits. As you heard at the start there, there's a little clip of a song that Liam Gallagher has released with Richard Ashcroft a couple of weeks ago now. So we're going to give some thoughts on that. Plus, also, I was at a book launch event for Simon Halfon's Supersonic book. And I caught up with Simon very briefly. And I caught up with James, who runs the Britpop Memories Twitter account. Another James from Oxfordshire who talks about Oasis and Britpop on the internet a lot. So that should be good. And one of the things that James talks about on there is his top five Britpop bands. So I think I'll give you my top five Britpop bands as well, as a bit of fun. I've also recorded recently with Julia Violonista, or Julia Rogers. That will be coming to you next time, but I just really wanted to get this over to you because it's been a little while. Right, before we get into any of that, just to let you know, as you will have heard at the little advert at the start, we are now less than a month to our show in Manchester, December the 11th at FAC 251, which is the old Factory Records building. So you knew I was going to be there. You knew that James Hargreaves, the brilliant YouTuber, was going to be there with his band, playing some amazing music. You even knew that our friend Ian and his brilliant Oasis tribute band, Oasis Supernova, were going to be there. But we have also now recently announced we've got a couple of Q&As going on. We've got a very cool doubleheader Q&A. It is with Sharon Latham, who is Noel Gallagher's photographer, has been for the last few years. Before that was the Man City photographer. So I'm sure with her in Manchester, we'll get some very interesting discussions about being on the road with Noel and even some football stuff with Man City as well. So very much looking forward to that as well. So we'll definitely be picking up on a lot of that stuff, which is cool. And also we will be talking on the same night to Debbie Ellis. So Debbie was the... who's been interviewed in here before. She was in the band Sister Lovers, shared the rehearsal space with Oasis, got them the gig in Glasgow because she was mates with McGee. So we'll definitely been digging into that with Debbie, as well as all the other cool stuff. And obviously Sharon and Debbie both being photographers. I think there's going to be quite an interesting discussion around getting into music photography and that sort of thing. So it should be a really, really good night. The tickets are linked in the description below. If you are a patron, you can come for free. You just need to let me know and I will give you the code to get your tickets for free. The promo code, if you're not a patron, if you use the code Supernova, you'll get about £3 off. So you can't say fairer than that. But it should be a really, really good evening. We've also got people from the Oasis Collectors Group coming down to do some exhibitions. I'll be doing some competitions on the night. So, yeah, it is basically an Oasis Expo. So, yeah, please come if you can, because we want to really get as many people in as we can. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that. All right, enough of my plugs. Let's talk about the Liam and Richard song, shall we? Let's have another little clip of it.
You know when nothing seems to fit, I couldn't see my way through the shit. When every single second of my waking day was thinking of you, thinking of you. You never know that I am alive.
So what do you think? Personally, I don't think it's that good, to be honest. I think that obviously I really like the original. I liked it a lot when it came out. I got the album. I was very excited about it. And I really, really liked a lot of that album. I saw him live on that tour. I saw him at Brixton Academy. And I do really like that Common People Were Making It Now tune. I think a problem with this version is a similar problem with the whole of the album. Is he's doing acoustic versions, but it's not like full acoustic, it's kind of full band acoustic, so it just hasn't got the same bite and power as the original version.
And there are so many things I can do, just like falling in love with you. So take my hand now, understand me, you can come here too. People, we're making it now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there are so many things I can do, just like falling in love with you. So take my hand now, understand me, you can come here too. Come on, people, we're making it now.
So yeah, I don't think it's as good as the original. I think it's great hearing Liam's voice. Personally, I think what probably would have been better is if Liam had just done the lead vocal and then maybe Richard had done the backing vocals. The fact that they sort of jump in and do little bits of vocals together, I don't know that they were in different studios, but I guess they probably were, because it doesn't feel like there's that sort of, you know, like the Ocean Colour Scene, Day Tripper, and they're live together and you're sort of swapping lines and it just has that feel to it. I don't really get any of that feel for it, to it at all. It just feels very cold. And the fact that like they're singing the same melodies, so it's not like Richard's harmonizing over him, or it's not like they're really, I don't know. I just think it's sort of, you know, a pretty wet version of a good song. Liam's voice is great, as it always is, but I think it is very sort of produced and maybe a bit kind of auto-tuned up. And I just think it feels a little bit sterile. Apologies if you guys like it. So I did a poll on it when it came out and I said, what do we think of the Liam / Ashcroft tune? 543 votes. Biblical. Well, my options were biblical, really good, okay, bit cheesy and rubbish. Biblical got 29%, really good got 31%, okay, a bit cheesy got 28% and rubbish got 12%. And just give you a few of your views. Richard Bowes, he knows a little bit about Oasis and the Verve. As good as it is to finally hear the two legends together and the harmonies are great, it's not as the same level as the original for me. Katie from Sound Effects Podcast said, it somehow reminded me of Bryan Adams and Mel C when you're gone. There's a late 90s Natalie Imbruglia Desiree vibe about it, which, yeah, I feel that. Neil Sharp just found it all a bit homoerotic. David Dugan gave us a different viewpoint. I won't hear a word against it. It's absolutely incredible. Liam's and Richard's vocals together, what a track. Can't listen to the original anymore. Craig Watson, I like the original version, but this doesn't really work. Wish they'd recorded a new song together instead. I agree. Dee Dee said, I'm confused about this. It's going to take me some time. It is Richard's tune, though, not Liam's. Can you imagine Liam's new album being this? Edgar, who is at Supernova Star, I love the original, but this is not good. It starts okay when they trade verses, but the both of them singing together just doesn't work. Maybe a couple of lines, but the longer it goes on, the worse it goes. Smitty, 3x3, says, it's a bit pointless. Was expecting a different arrangement or maybe an acoustic version. We got another shout for Mel C and Bryan Adams, which was MAF Jones 5. And would you kindly pointed out, it's the Four Tops Reach Out, isn't it? Yes, it is. So this is one of my issues with the original song, is it the verse sounds exactly like the Four Tops Reach Out, I'll Be There. So let's have a little bit of that. So yeah, there you go. Not great. I agree with a couple of those comments there. Personally, it would have been better, I think, if they'd done a new song, or maybe if they, I don't know. It just doesn't really work for me. But there you are. They can't all be hits, can they? All right. We also had some more new music from an ex-Oasis member. Andy Bell released a new album through his side project called Glock, G-L-O-K. It's called Pattern Recognition. And let's have a little bit, shall we? So I think this is really, really good. I really enjoyed the first Glock album. I think this is a real step up. I think we've got a bit more of the stuff I like. So we've got some more vocals in there. We've got some more guitars in there. I think generally it keeps that sort of lo-fi sort of beats vibe. That's just very, very cool. As I said, I spoke to Andy Bell in the last interview I did, I really enjoy it, like almost as background music. You know, if I'm working or if I'm doing something else, I can have it on the background, and it's just got that cool vibe to it. But this has then got an extra sort of level to it. I really like the tracks with the vocals on them, whether that's sort of the spoken word. Yeah, it's really, really good. I was reading a review of it that said it's too long. Yes, it is like an 18-minute album, but it doesn't bother me at all. Like, I think you need to accept this isn't like a 40-minute, you know, just chuck it on to specifically listen to it. I think it's sort of it's 80 minutes, but why not? You know, if you just got these cool songs that are just, you know, got, that you've just, you're in the vibe and you're enjoying it, then enjoy it. It starts, the first track, Dirty Hugs, is like is almost 20 minutes long. And then the last track, Invocation, is 15 minutes long. And then you've got these sort of ones in the middle, bit shorter, bit snappier. But still, it's just a really great piece of work. Very cool that, you know, as well as doing his stuff with Ride and the stuff in his own name with his fantastic debut proper solo album last year. The fact he can just knock these out as well, it's just great. And like when I interviewed him, he sort of said that, you know, I think it was kind of, you know, that realization of, you know, well, why not just get on with it? You know, get some more stuff out there in the world, leave more of a legacy. So, I think it's absolutely fantastic. So, well done, Andy. Great work. And I suppose the only other piece of news really is that Liam on Twitter confirmed that his new album is done. A bunch of us already bought it because it was the pre-order for the Nebworth thing. So I'd already sort of agreed to buy it before it was finished. And he's confirmed it's to be mixed by the mighty Spike. So that would be Mark Spike Stent, who, you know, we've worked with Oasis and various other people. So very excited for that. So hopefully that should be sounding good. We're looking forward to it. And yes, if you've been in a WH Smith recently or another bookshop, you will have seen that Supersonic, the book from Simon Halfen that I interviewed Simon about a couple of episodes ago. It's absolutely storming. It's top 10 or whatever it's been. It's massive on every major bookstore and every doing really, really well. And I was there at the book launch. So I met up with James from Britpop Memories, who also blagged an invite somehow. I'm not sure how. It was at the Adidas store in Carnaby Street. And it was all decked out. Very, very cool. Very exciting. And we got a cool little goodie bag with a record and a print and an Oasis Supersonic tote bag. That was nice. And I had some an evening out, which is very strange. I caught up with James from Britpop Memories. And so we'll hear that in a minute. But I also caught up with Simon. So let's have this, my brief discussion here with Simon. All right, so we're here at Adidas, Carnaby Street, with Simon. How are you doing, Simon?
All the better for seeing you, James.
We've got a fantastic evening. We're launching the Supersonic book. It's been lovely. Phil's here. Phil Smith's been here, which was nice to see. I saw Kevin Cummins as well, the photographer.
I see Kevin.
Yeah, he's been here, apparently. I think so. I think it was him.
I'm going to say hello to him, actually. Yeah. Alec King was here. It's nice to see him, and you know, it's just been, you know, a lot of love in the room for the band, for the book. It's just been great, you know. So, and it looks great. Everything looks great. It's here all week. This you could come and wander around all week. So, and you've got the shop window for a week. It's just, you know, it's a great collaboration between us and Adidas.
It's really smart. I mean, it's really like all these huge blown up images, and we just saw Phil Smith was here. There's a picture there of Liam with Phil in the background. Yeah, he's looking great.
Yeah,
there's some fantastic images up.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's a really good marriage between Oasis and Adidas, I think. And it was an easy one to do. And the guys at Adidas have been absolutely fantastic.
Wonderful.
That's our cue to go, I think.
All right.
Thank you so much, Shane. It's
been great to see you, Simon. Thank you very much for the invite, and good luck with the book.
Thank you very much indeed.
So, as you heard there, Phil Smith was there. I met him initially at Starshaped, and I did try and get an interview with him backstage a couple of years ago now, and he was just like, mate, I'm not into it. So I was like, okay, fine. So I didn't pester him. And then I clocked him at this event, and I thought, brilliant. I could try and get Phil. So I went over, but then Phil was desperately trying to talk to Simon about this huge sort of picture of Liam from a very early gig, and Phil was there in the background. And so, I sort of started in this whole discussion, and I took a photo of Phil standing next to this picture and stuff. But then I sort of got collared by some other person in a band, and I started chatting to this other guy. And then by the time I finished chatting to that guy, Phil had left. And so it was a real pain because I only really spoke to him very briefly. But so that's a shame. So maybe if I meet him again, third time will be the charm. But anyway, as I said, I also caught up with James from Britpop Memories. And we had quite a fun chat. So let's have a little bit of that. And I'll see you on the other side.
All right, so we're here at the... is that working? I don't know, there's blobs happening. All right. So we're here at Adidas in Carnaby Street for the book launch of Supersonic. Now, I just did a review of Supersonic on the podcast, and I said it was absolutely brilliant, and that was nothing to do with the fact that I got invited to the book launch. But I'm here with James, aka Britpop Memories. How you doing, mate?
I am very well, thank you. Very much enjoying the event. Nice.
It's really cool, isn't it? Have you had a look at the book yet? Did you get a copy?
I haven't yet. My copy apparently is in the post. I have been sent one, and I am waiting to arrive. So I'll have a read of my one on the way home. It'll be nice.
Yeah, no, it's been good. But what about? I mean, you're known for being a Britpop guy. I mean, where do Oasis rank for you? Because I know you're a big OCS guy as well.
I am a massive OCS fan. Well, so, I mean, traditionally, I started out in this whole thing as a massive Oasis fan. I mean, Oasis are the band that changed it all for me. So I started out in my early teens as like a Nirvana fan, like everyone does, all that sort of stuff. And then there's that night that I'm sat there, Friday night, my parents have gone to the village pub, I've got the telly, I'm watching The Word. Next thing you know, on comes Oasis playing Supersonic, and I'm just sat there going, whoa, really? What is that?
Give it up for Oasis, making their TV debut with Supersonic.
And it just like absolutely blew me away. And then, so that's Friday night, then Monday morning at school, me and my mates are like, did you see that? Did you see The Word? Did you see that band? I don't know who they are. Who are they? I don't know. But that song's amazing. And then it all starts from there. And then from that moment, like Nirvana just goes
way down.
It's gone.
And how old were you at that time, mate?
So that's what, that's March 94. So I was 15.
15, okay.
Yeah. So, which is like a great time to be suddenly discovering some entire new world, which is about to take over. It's great.
So did you have long greasy hair at the time, and you suddenly shaved it all off and got a mod cut?
No, I've never been cool. I had curtains. I had the sideburns I've got now. I've always had them, but yeah, curtains, which yeah, they went later.
Fair enough. So did you go out and buy the stuff at that point? Did you get definitely maybe early on?
I had no money because I was a kid living out in the sticks, so I didn't even have a job. So I got definitely maybe, my first definitely maybe was basically a copy that a mate's brother made for me. But I probably wore that out, the C90, wore it out. And yeah, but then I started buying the singles once I had the cash, and yeah, went from there really.
Yeah, fair enough. And then what about, because I know you're a big OCS and Weller guy, so was that, the Oasis was the first step, and then the rest of the world comes in?
Yeah, it's pretty much, I guess, because Weller for me was a complete mystery, because my parents are a bit too old to be the Jam. My parents are obviously teenagers in the 60s, they're all the Beatles, all that. So Weller and the Jam and the Style Council sort of didn't exist in my world. Next thing I know, I through Oasis and whatever, I start hearing about this Paul Weller. And then, yeah, I discover his solo material. And to me, he's like this amazing solo artist. I then find out he was in a band called the Jam.
Yeah. I had that. I actually bought a Best of the Who and a Best of the Jam on the same day. And I didn't know which one was 60s, 70s, whatever. I just knew that the Who and the Jam, right. I need to get those.
Yeah, that's how it is, isn't it? So my musical education is the 60s, early 70s. Then my parents get married, get a mortgage, get a dog, have me. You know, their lives sort of stop. You know, they stop being cool. So the whole of the late 70s, punk, all that, the 80s, it all doesn't exist until I discover music in the early 90s.
Right. And what about then when the Britpop Memories account, when did you start that and why did you do it? Do you regret it now after hours and hours and hours of putting stuff on Twitter?
Crawling around the loft. So I started that about probably 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember exactly, but basically when I got a Twitter account, I used to spend a lot of time trying to find out about Britpop. I'm trying to capture my youth and go back to it. And I just searched for Britpop all the time. And I kept finding hardly anything. And one day I just thought to myself, well, no one's putting Britpop on Twitter. Twitter's massive. Why don't I put it on there? And yeah, I had like a massive, massive stockpile of old enemies and Melody Makers. So I just started putting it on there, and next thing you knew, I got like 10 followers, 100 followers, 1,000 followers. And it just started snowballing, and people are messaging me, like saying, this is amazing, you should get more, we need more of it. And here we are, like nearly 25,000 followers, and it's been crazy, it's been amazing.
You got 25,000?
Just about, nearly, I'm getting there. It'll be there by probably about Christmas, I think.
I've only got 12,000.
Yeah, well, you only do one band. So that's not bad, is it? I do 90 bands, and I've only got 24 and a half.
Fair enough. All right. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Well, give me your top 5 Britpop bands. Go.
Okay, so it would be Oasis, Blur, Ocean Colour Scene. I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to say Weller's Solo.
Okay.
Because I will include that as Britpop.
All right.
And that gives me one more, and I'm going to say probably the Blue Tones.
Fair enough. I think that's fair enough.
Wasn't very fair, though, was it? I wasn't warned about that. You're a nasty man.
Not at all. You'll do that tomorrow and come up with another 5.
And this is the nightmare with this in the account. People ask me, what's your top 10 so-and-so? What's your favourite this? And I'll go, oh, God, it's I think it's so-and-so. Yeah. And then the next day, someone will ask me the same again. I go, oh, no, it's totally different.
I know.
And you're just thinking, there's no continuity here. It's a nightmare.
You know what? I mean, I know I don't want to sound like an old fart saying things were better in my day.
They
were. Fucking hell, things were better in my day, right? You know, I put on Britpop Revival, right? And listened to Nick's brilliant show.
Yep, yep.
And I'll hear something, like whether it's, I don't know, Catch or Lush.
Yeah.
Or, like, the depth was so strong. The strength in depth, it felt like... I think it's just I love the guitar sound. I think that's what it comes down to for me. Even if the songs weren't great, even if it wasn't necessarily great lyrics or what, it's just there's something about the way that those songs were recorded that it's just so special to me.
I fully agree. And the other thing is, Nick's very good at this, and I'm still discovering as well. Bands that I don't remember from the 90s, and you hear the songs, and it's like hearing a new song.
Yeah.
So it's like being on Spotify and hearing some random song out of the blue. You go, whoa, what's that? That's amazing. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, I mean, I've literally done it this week. I've gone through an old enemy. I found an advert for a band called Fancy, I think they were called. I don't remember. And I was like, I found it on YouTube. Listen, I was like, that is so cool. And I've been on eBay and it's arrived literally this morning. It's in my kitchen. It's coming from like Music Magpie, whatever, who I'm keeping in business, by the way. And yeah, it's like Spotify, but it's like 25-year-old Spotify.
You could literally, like, you know, I remember saving up and thinking, right, I've got 15 quid.
Yeah.
Shall I buy the Cooler Shaker album or the Mannix album? You know, that was it. Like, that's
Or did you buy, like, 4 or 5 singles and get, like, all the B-sides? Because that's the other thing. I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
You know, back then, a CD single was basically like an EP, wasn't it? It was 4 tracks. And Oasis are obviously famous for it. But OCS, Suede... Blur, not so much, I think, although I might get slated here. Blur's B-sides aren't as strong as the Oasis, Pulp, Suede.
Yeah.
They're not But yeah, to buy an Ocean Colour Scene single was to buy like
an EP,
nearly half an album. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
It's really good.
Yeah, no, I know, and it is. I mean, I completely agree. There's certain things like Boy Wonder by Speedy, and all these songs that I didn't know. Well, you might have seen a 20-second clip of it on the chart show on Channel 4.
Yeah, on ITV.
You know, and like, and then just literally like, bang, it's gone. Oh, right. Well, that was cool. Oh, right. Yeah. So I'm not going to go and get slapped to a record shop in London.
Because your money was so precious.
No, exactly. So I was only bloody 15, so...
Yeah. You
know. They're called Speedy, and they're just about to perform their new single, Boy Wonder. Any minute now.
Better late than never.
When she got his poster free, she liked his eyes and boyish smile. It was in some magazine, but now that she's 13, I should take it down. But how would she feel if it were real?
So yes, I think we're very in the right to still be banging on about how things were better in the 90s because they fucking were.
I think they were. I mean, I know maybe things weren't perfect, but really it was fun. Yeah. It was simple. It was a simple time, wasn't it? I mean, let's face it. You had like 5 TV channels,
yeah.
You know, 4 radio stations, whatever it might be. Everything was pretty simple, pretty straightforward. The Enemy and the Melody Maker, pretty much. Spoon fed you the bands, you know, you didn't even have to go looking for them particularly. The gigs were great and the gigs were cheap. Remember how cheap gigs were, like £5 or whatever, to see like maybe Ash supported by 60 Foot Dolls when there's 2 good bands, and it cost you almost nothing. Nowadays, of course, they don't make the money on the albums, so they have to make the money on the gigs, and the gigs are like 50-60 quid. It was a different time. It was a better time. It was better.
It
bloody well was.
Okay. Let's keep it going. But anyway, so what's your... So we were saying earlier, so it's been a lot of 25th anniversaries. So for people that don't follow, so you tend to like... You've got your stack of stuff that you collected in the 90s. And do you still go and buy old magazines and newspapers as well?
I am still... There are gaps. Yeah, there are gaps. I still need to find quite a lot of the later Britpop stuff. Magazines and stuff. So my collection starts to peter out into the 98 sort of era. So I am always on eBay looking for little job lots or little bundles of magazines that people are trying to get rid of. So, yeah, that's... Yeah, my collection isn't perfect. It needs a bit of work. But yeah, 25 year anniversaries is my thing.
Yeah.
I just felt it was better to stick with that because 25 years, you know, Silver Jubilee, it's a nice little number, rather than going, well, yeah, 23, 24, yeah, etc. And it just gives me something to focus on. So literally every week, if you follow my account, you're basically following Britpop by the week.
Yeah.
Which I've not really thought about, but that's actually what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's a week by week.
It's like Top of the Pops on BBC 4.
Yeah.
That we're now it's in exactly like 91 like or whatever.
It's exactly
we?
Like that.
Yeah.
So just not on the telly.
Yeah. And it's the good years, not the shit years. Like, it's now currently like 91, I think, on Top of the
that's
Pops.
That's right. And you don't have to pay a TV license for me. I'm free.
You're free.
Just free and easy.
Just data charges.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, quite, yeah.
But cool. All right. So what's the handle?
It's at Britpop Memories. Nicely simple.
Brilliant. James, thank you very much.
Thank you, James.
Let's
cheers.
Go and get some more free beers.
Yeah, why not?
So that was really good to see James again. I'd seen him at, I think, the Water Rat show and maybe another place as well. But that was really good to catch up with him. And if you're not following him, then you really should be at Britpop Memories on Twitter. And yeah, we talked about his top 5 Britpop bands. So I thought... I'll give you mine as an interesting thing to do in this episode. So this is difficult because obviously with Britpop, you get into the whole what is Britpop debate, which I find quite tiresome. I've been seeing it, you know, it's been raging on online for many years and there's no definitive answer because, you know, what counts as Britpop? I was there, you know, I lived through it. I've got the Melody Maker, I've got the Select magazines, I've got the Enemies. So a lot of people saying, oh, they weren't Britpop. Well, they weren't there. They didn't live it. As I said, someone that was 16 in 96 like me, I kind of have a good feel for what it is. And for me, I think Britpop is an overall encompassing term which takes into account all of the bands that were primarily guitar-based from the United Kingdom, releasing albums in that kind of mid-90s period. Now, it gets tricky when you get into people like, okay, well, what about Texas? Texas feel a bit too pop for me. I actually did like a bit of a chart recently with my with one of my daughters where we sort of did it, and it was like a mod symbol where we kind of placed them all. Okay, well, where are they, you know, on the whole Britpop chart? Are they more in the rock side? Are they more in the dance side? Are they more in the pop side? Or are they more in the kind of the lo-fi-ish side? And because there's lots of kind of, you know, someone like Menswear would just be right in the middle, you know, whereas then, you know, someone like The Prodigy, well, they're not really Britpop, but they played Nebworth, they were releasing records, they were a huge part of that mid-90s and late 90s scene, so it is difficult because where'd you put them? Back in the day, my favourite bands were Oasis, Pulp, The Prodigy, and the Manic Street Preachers. So they're the ones that I saw live the most. They were the ones whose albums I listened to the most, and I generally own the most records of. So it's a very clear top four for me. Beyond that, it's really hard because I found with a lot of Britpop where I might have liked one album that I really, really loved, but then I didn't really listen to loads of their other albums. So, for instance, Supergrass. I absolutely love the first Supergrass album. I've got probably the next... I've probably got all their stuff, and I listen to especially the second album a lot. But really, for me, it's all about that first album. I absolutely love it. And I'd probably say exactly the same about the Blue Tones and Ash. Both of those groups I absolutely adore. And then also you've got people like The Charlatans and The Lightning Seeds, who I really liked all their singles, never really got into their albums. And so yeah, really it was getting like the best of, and that I've really enjoyed over the years. So it's really hard in terms of what is the, who are your top five kind of, you know, at the time and now. Over the years then, because it's not just the Britpop years, obviously, you then go into like the 2000s, beyond that, and a lot of bands carried on doing amazing stuff all throughout the 2000s. And if you take that into account as well, then definitely making my top five would be the Super Furry Animals and would be the Divine Comedy. And I didn't mention Blur earlier. You can't really get away from Blur. Blur are absolutely brilliant. So yeah, for me, I would have to say my top five Britpop bands, when you take into account their entire discography, I would say number one's got to be Oasis. Obviously, I do the Oasis podcast and I talk about them all the time on here, but you can't get away from the fact that just the sheer quantity of brilliant songs, you know, as James was saying there, you know, seeing Supersonic on The Word and just being like, wow, what is that? You know, these guys didn't just become the biggest Britpop band through, you know, being pushed by the label or by the way they looked or the way they talked or whatever. It did come down to just everything being on point. And what it really then came down to was the songs, the quality of the songs. So unsurprisingly, Oasis are number one.
This is Top of the Pops, and loads of people are going to be pogoing and wearing sunglasses, but none of them are number one. Are you kidding?
Nah.
And now, exclusive last week, and this week is number one. A great moment for the show because Oasis is Top of the Pops!
My number two would be the Super Furry Animals. And that's not necessarily where I was in the mid-90s. That does more come down to their later albums. I think that, you know, from Gorilla and then Rings Around the World, as well as the mid-90s albums, I just think their body of work was really, really impressive. So at the time, in the mid-90s, if we're just talking, you know, 95 to 98 or something like that, then, you know, they probably wouldn't be in the top five. But then I think when you do take into account all the other stuff as well, I think they have to be in there. So creative, such great songs, but not sort of po-faced. There's always a sense of humour about them as well. So, yeah, Super Furry Animals at number two. So number three, I'm going to go with Pulp. Pulp were the really big band for me, along with Oasis, in the mid-90s. They were the band whose name I carved into my desk, much to the upset of my parents at the time. And yeah, and Jarvis was a real icon for me, real inspiration for joining a band and for, you know, just as a hero. Obviously, there was all the Michael Jackson, you know, jumping on stage, and he was just so funny in interviews, and the geek chic element of it. He was just such a hero, and yeah, and I absolutely loved Pulp. Probably from hearing the live set on Glastonbury, I recorded it off the radio when they headlined Glastonbury, and I just hammered that tape over and over again. Got Different Class, hammered that until it literally broke. And then went back and got all the singles from the His and Hers era and got the His and Hers album, obviously. And then when the This Is Hardcore album came out, got that. And at first was a bit, what's this? But now I think it's a masterpiece. And yeah, and then even the We Love Life album I think is really good as well. So never went back to the early stuff. I've kind of listened to odd tracks here and there, and it never really done it for me. So I've never done the deep dive into that. But yeah, just as a once again, body of work, incredible. Some amazing albums, brilliant lyrics, brilliant music, and great live as well. So yeah, Pulp, number three. All right. I wanna take you home. I wanna give you children. You might be my girlfriend. Okay, next up at four, I have the Manic Street Preachers. Now, we can get into the whole are they Britpop debate, but yes, they are. Especially Everything Must Go. That is definitely a Britpop album. It was huge in that time. They supported Oasis at Nebworth. They played all the Britpop type TV shows. They were in the magazines. They were British. And yeah, so yes, they didn't look and sound like Menswear, but this is a Britpop band. Or at least they were making Britpop type music in the Britpop time in the mid 90s. Yeah, so Manics, I was a bit late for the whole Richie thing, but I got into them probably, you know, when Everything Must Go came out, and then went back and sort of discovered the Holy Bible and those earlier albums as well, and just thought they were incredible. I did a Manic Street Preachers podcast, Manic Street Speakers, and so if you want to hear me talk about the Manics in a lot more detail, then go and give that a listen. I'll put a link in the description below if I can remember. But yeah, they are a really special band for me, and especially driving up and down to university. I only had a tape player in my car, and Mannix was one of the only bands whose I had tapes of. And so I remember just hammering the Mannix, especially the Holy Bible, going up and down to Leicester, where I was studying. And so, yeah, so they really did mean a lot. And that was 1998 when the This Is My Truth album came out as well. So, yeah, very special band. Did follow them through and have listened to the stuff over the years and enjoyed it, but never really kind of, you know, I probably feel the same way about the Mannix later stuff, like a lot of people feel the same way about the Oasis later stuff and the Oasis solo stuff. And it's like, yeah, I might enjoy it if I hear it, but I'm not really going to dig it out and spend much time on it. But those few albums in the early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, I think are really, really strong. And once again, incredible lyrics. Lyrics are really big to me. Great lyrics. I love the fact that they would dress up and do slogans and be crazy. Love all that stuff. So yeah, very, very special band. Mannix Street Preachers. You need your styles, for killers have prestige. Access to a living, do what I see. 24 hour but I'm a convicted instantly. Cause it's poverty of creativity. Slash and burn. Kill to live, to fuck it. Slash, run to the madness. Kill to live. Okay, so lastly, in fifth place, I'm going to cop out here because I've been thinking about this and I can't separate two bands, which is Blur and The Divine Comedy. So Blur are like the quintessential Britpop band. So many great albums all the way through. And, you know, in terms of what they mean to Britpop and what they mean to the... You know, overall, they would be the obvious choice to be one or two, not number five. But the thing with Divine Comedy is that, for me personally, they've just meant a lot over the years. I think his lyrics are so brilliant. Once again, it's down to lyrics. I mean, Damon Albarn's lyrics are great as well, but Neil Hannon, such a great lyricist. Really beautiful music, incredibly put together. And a real interesting different changes throughout his career as well. You know, from the Regeneration album, which was a lot more kind of full band with Nigel Godrick sort of producing and bringing that kind of Radiohead sort of style to it. But then, yeah, so a complete cop-out here for me because I couldn't pick between them. If we're going purely Britpop, then it would be Blur. If we're going... You know, who means the most to me and whose, you know, albums would I save if they were being washed away to shore, then it would be The Divine Comedy.
Give me your love and I'll give you the perfect love song with a divine Beatles bass line and a big old Beach Boys sound. I'll match you pound for pound, like heavy weights in the final round. We'll hold on to each other so we don't fall down. We'll be right back.
All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that. That was my top five Britpop. Feel free to get in touch and let me know what you think or what your top five is. If you want to drop me an audio message, that's always appreciated. Email it over to oasispod@gmail.com. That will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the Oasis podcast. And sorry, it was a month in the making, but I will be back very soon, I promise. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. A big load of Patreon gifts went out last month, and I'm just waiting on a few more bits to come in, and then another load will go out. So if you are a top level supporter on Patreon, then you should have something on the way. And as I mentioned earlier, if you are a patron and you are in the UK, then do please come on down to the Oasis podcast live in Manchester. You can come in for free if you're a patron, or if you are not a patron, then do use the promo code Supernova for £3 off. Get on over there. It should be a fantastic night. December the 11th, FAC 251. And just to recap, Sharon Latham and Debbie Ellis in conversation and Q&A, and live music from the Oasis tribute band Oasis Supernova and James Hargreaves. Now, any of those things you'd be paying 15, 20 quid for just by themselves. So to get all of them and to be able to see me in person, come on. It's a bargain at half the price. So come on, make sure you come on down if you can. Do please follow on social media at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. Do email me, oasispod@gmail.com. Follow on YouTube. Quite a few bits have gone up over there recently. And if you can write a review of the podcast over on Apple Podcasts, that would be greatly appreciated as well. All right, I think that will do it for today. I'm out of practice, to be honest, remembering all this crap I say at the end. But anyway, I remember the one thing I definitely do always say, which is stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young. Just like